where we are making stuff up, being real, and talking about it. Hey, it's really good to see you, and you're not gonna believe this. I'm the only one here right now. Well, you see, things got busy for me, and also I'm lazy and a little bit spaced out. So I didn't really line up guests for this week. And I thought, well, you know, then I will just have to be a one-person parade. So I was thinking that that might be a good theme for the show today. I was thinking about, but we have a lot of goodies lined up for you, so don't worry. It's not just going to be me babbling at you for 2 hours. But I was thinking about one-person parade because I've been working on my posture to stand up straighter, and, you know, be more structurally sound, as they say. And so I was out taking a walk with Helmut and working on my posture. And I said to Helmut, how do I look? You know, do I look pretty upright? He said, you look like you're in a one-person parade. So that's what got me thinking about it. And then I thought, well, what if we just go through our day as if we are in a one-person parade? What would that be like? I don't mean, you know, singing and waving at everybody we see, but like going through the day with the attitude of, I'm happy to be here seeing everybody and playing, and I'm available to play and to have a nice interaction. What if we assume that everybody's cheering us on in the world? What would it be like if we thought everybody's cheering us on, even if they're not actually doing it, if we just imagine that secretly they're cheering us on? I like this thought. I like to think that everybody's cheering me on. And then I also like to imagine that just by smiling at them, maybe I'm brightening their day, even if they don't show it. It is a game for me sometimes as I walk around in the day doing this and that errand or working or whatever I'm doing to see how many people I can get to smile and have one of those nice moments where you give eye-to-eye contact and you smile and maybe you do the little down nod or you do the up nod. So that's what I think about when I think about being in a one-person parade. Maybe I just go through trying to brighten people's days. I was one time at the Oregon Country Fair up there in Oregon, and there was it's a big hippie festival. It's wonderful. I just loved it. If you have a chance, go to it because it's a lot of fun. Really great performers and artists and community. It's great. But somebody had put up a sign that had all these little life touchstones, things like, you know, I can't remember. The one that stick out in my mind is the one I wanted to mention, which said, presume welcome. Presume welcome. And I thought, that's really great. What if you just go through life with the idea that you are welcome? Now, I'm not talking about trespassing or acting crazy or trying to steal things. That's not what I'm saying. But what if you just assume that you are welcome in the world and you can smile and play with people and be nice? I love that attitude. I try to do it as often as I can, to presume welcome. And then lastly, my last thought about this one-person parade is that if you go through life as a one-person parade, you never know whom just might join in. Because maybe people watching you and they say, that person's acting crazy, or that person look crazy. Yeah, that can happen, and maybe they make fun, or they think you're crazy, whatever. But maybe by being a one-person parade, by being a smiley, waving, presuming welcome, maybe you are also making it okay for other people to do the same. You are issuing an invitation to play, to commune, to create together. But just by being. There's a video on the internet of a guy at a music festival, and he's dancing on the hillside all by himself, silly dancing, funny, just having a good old time. Nobody dancing with him. Then all of a sudden, one person come to dance with him. And then another. And then another. And then all from the sudden, everybody, huge crowd, running, people running to come and dance with this guy. And then there's this big, huge crowd of people dancing. And it was all from just this guy, just leading his own parade. If you want to see this video, go to YouTube and search for Sasquatch Music Festival 2009. Sasquatch Music Festival 2009. Also, if you get a chance, try to say that word out loud, Sasquatch, because it's really fun to say out loud. Word of the day, Sasquatch. Anyway, you see then the guy dancing and he invite everybody to dance with him. So that's my thoughts for the day. Coming up later in the show, we have interview with a guru. We have a funny sketch from the Giselle Show Players. We have a couple of hundred words. We have a pep talk from our friend Obadiah. Lots of fun things. But right now, my friend Julie from Santa Monica, California, she write 100 words about this one person parade. And so I want to read it to you. I like what she writes. She writes, "I am a one-person parade. Yeah, but who isn't? I hate to sound jaded. Lie, my coolness depends on it. But aren't each and every one of us convinced we are the center of this big, flashy universe? The protagonist, the hero, the darling? Everyone else, the supporting cast. The day players, guest stars, extras. And maybe it's true. And maybe it's sweet. I am the most important person in the galaxy, just like everyone else." Oh, I just love that. She bring it around right there at the end, just like everyone else. We all are on one-person parade. Let's own it. I love that. Well, this week, my friends, because we don't have anybody sitting here with me, and I'm just have all these goodies to play that we've recorded, it's also a great time for you to Skype in and or tweet and or email, because I have a lot of time for listener interaction if you would like to. So feel free. But right now, I'm very excited. So I have this spiritual teacher that I like very much. Her name is Catherine Ingram. And she travels all around the world doing public events and speaking and doing all this stuff. She happened to be in the Los Angeles area for this month and the next month. And I'm so excited. And we got to go sit with her and be with her. And I wanted to have an interview to share with you her wonderful perspective. She's a really interesting and great lady, and she's been so helpful to me in having mental peace. So here we go. Here's an interview with Catherine Ingram. Well, my friends, I'm so excited for today because I have this spiritual teacher who I like so much. Her name is Catherine Ingram. And you're not going to believe this, but she's sitting right here with me right now. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Giselle.
Hello. It is so nice to see you.
And to see you.
And also with us here is our friend Shira Barlas, who you know from some podcasts ago. Hello, Shira.
Hi, Giselle. How are you?
Hello, Shira. Shira is our young friend. She's a spunky lady, and she's a studying Buddhist and a community activist and a healing activist. And she has metal rings in her face, which I love so much.
Giselle, it's so great to be here.
Good. Well, I'm just so excited, Catherine, about your work, because it has helped me so much, your ideas and the way you talk about life, that I wanted to share it with everybody and with Shira too. I know she will really like to learn it. Mm-hmm. So you talk about presence and passionate presence and awakened awareness. Maybe can you just tell us what is that?
Well, it's really an experience. And it's one that's quite common and that everyone really knows, but sometimes overlooks or doesn't quite honor in the way that it deserves. But it's really those moments, you might call them like perfect moments, you know, like we all have what just seems like a perfect moment whereby you're just being and there's no chatter in your mind about being anywhere else or being anything else or being somebody else. And you're just immersed in the experience that you're having in a wordless way, even if thoughts are going by, but that you're not dreaming of some other scenario that would be better. You're not thinking about anything like that at all. You're immersed in a wonderment. And so that is something that one can induce more frequently than just going along and hoping that happens. And it does happen enough to people. It does happen a lot, you know. There are moments, you know, maybe it's looking into your lover's eyes or your dog is really happy to see you at the end of the day or you know, a baby is in front of you and any number of moments that people forget, in a sense, their little self and merge into a much bigger sense of self. And those moments, you could say, represent a passionate presence. And the reason I use the word passionate rather than just presence is that it's enlivened. They're enhanced and enlivened, and they sparkle a little bit stronger, you know. So that's passionate presence. It's also awakened awareness. It's pretty much the same. They're interchangeable in that your attention is in a full engagement with life.
Yes. Right. You know, when you talk about those moments, I was thinking of things like four of us were out to dinner the other night and we was sharing a piece of flourless chocolate cake. And we're just laughing and eating this delicious cake. And I felt that way. I felt like there's just only right now and I'm laughing with my friends.
Yeah.
And I felt so, like you say, just right there.
Yeah. And last night I spoke about that experience is kind of like timeless.
Yes.
You know, that it's just this sense of timelessness that, you know, you're just in this immersion. Right. And often we look back at those moments in our lives and they pop in our memory in a very different way. The very first time I went to India was in 1976. I went for a year. That year has the most bizarre position in my memory, that one year in 1976. It's like I remember almost every day, you know. It's like so strange.
Was you wearing disco pants?
No, I was wearing big, big, huge dresses and skirts.
Oh, yeah.
We used to have to, this is a long time ago, and things, let's hope, have changed, but sometimes you were in a circumstance where you literally had to just squat in a field to pee.
Oh.
And so it was really nice to have a gigantic skirt.
Yes. Pardon me, everybody, while I help me undo my disco pants in the field.
Yeah, that wouldn't
have
worked.
That would have been hard. So you remember this in a special way?
Yeah, and because there was this sense of passionate presence. You know, we were so enlivened by where we were, and we were there to practice meditation. So we were immersed in Dharma day and night and in a crowd of friends, which shows, I said last night, the experience of a sense of belonging is one of the great happinesses of life. And I've had so many people tell me over the years who've done retreats that they feel that at the end of their lives, what is going to pop in their memory are their times in the retreats, because, you know, you're slowed down and you're paying such, you know, careful attention just in a relaxed way. You know, you're just noticing. That's the whole sort of transmission of the retreat, is to really soak in your own awareness, kind of like I use the word baptized in your own awareness. And that even though you're just, you know, looking at some plants or watching a little frog at night or smelling the jasmine in the air or whatever, depending on where you are, it's imprinting in memory in a very different way than the kind of careening from one thing to the next that we do in our modern lives.
Oh, yeah.
We do. And it all becomes kind of a blur.
Yeah, you find the careening.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm the pinball mm-hmm. in the pinball machine mm-hmm. and I'm just being bet from yeah. here to here and yeah. bing, 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 bing. And then I go for extra point and you just gutter ball, whatever they call it, you know, but just being bing, bing all around.
I know. And that has become speed and jamming the day with activities and emails and texts and Facebook and Twitter all the different things. I mean, remember the days, it wasn't that long ago, when you walked into your house and there was nothing to be answered. If someone happened to call while you were out, they had to call back when you were there. You know, it wasn't that long ago. And now I always have the sense that things are piling up. Even as we sit here, things are piling up, waiting for my attention.
You know? I notice you keep checking your phone. I'm joking. She's not doing it. Wouldn't that be funny? You talking right. about be here now and you right. hold on, I just have to answer this.
Just a second.
So how do we get more of these moments, like you say, more of these timeless moments, more of these moments that pop in our memory? How do we induce it, like you say?
Well, first of all, you begin to notice. You begin to notice it. You know, you start to direct your attention just to that channel, I like to say. You know, it's a quiet channel. You know, and even in this very moment, you know, to you listening and to whoever else is listening, in this very moment, you can just be simply hearing the words and recognizing they're going straight in. If you speak this language, you're cognizing without any effort whatsoever. And that you're just here in this, wherever you happen to be, you can kind of sense the expanse around it. In our case, we can sense a great expanse because we can see it. But even if you're just in a room, you can sense the fact that your room is floating in big space. You begin to realize that here you are, this creature with this power of cognition, that you can move your attention around. And often people, you know, due to conditioning, their attention is essentially locked in a tiny closet with a bunch of thoughts that are screaming in their head. And this doesn't have to be your experience of this life, even though thoughts do run on their own. But you don't have to have the sense that you're locked in your head with them, you know, that in fact they're actually just disappearing into open space like so much else, like any other group of electrical impulses. So once you begin to experience that directly and get a taste for it, then it becomes, like I said last night, a haunting, because you don't really want to be locked in the old neurotic closet anymore, right? You'd like to be out and about.
I would like to strolling down the Avenue of Freedom in my disco pants.
Yes. That would suit you, Giselle.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, so you basically then start to fall in love. This haunting starts to fall in, just like any other kind of falling in love. There's a haunting and then there's this falling in love, whereby you just don't really want to be anywhere else. It's a holy yearning, my teacher used to call it, a holy yearning.
A holy yearning.
Yeah, it's like a yearning for your sweet spot, especially if you've tasted it, which we all have. It's just the importance is to recognize the beauty of that and to have a light intention to return to it as frequently as you can. And as I said last night, don't have an expectation of yourself that you need to have a steady state in this. You don't.
Oh.
You don't have to have a steady state in that. You can leave a little room for being crazy sometimes and being annoyed or being depressed. You know, those arise. That's part of being human. But when the haunting is there, you realize, I don't really want to be angry half the day, right? I don't want to be depressed half the day. I don't want to be grumbling about this or that or worried about the future, you know, half the day. If thoughts arise here and there is one thing, but, you know, to not really immerse in those thoughts and be highly interested in having many more of them.
Yeah.
So this love affair begins to decondition the tendencies of the neurotic habits and recondition the awareness into what I call conditioned in freedom.
Okay, we have to sit with that and just repeat it. The love affair, the haunting, falling in love with that feeling of timeless, vast, spacious being present in the flow.
Yeah.
Falling in love with that feeling, we put our attention. Wait. I got all lost. I got jumbled up again. We decondition so we can recondition.
Kind of, yeah. It happens simultaneously, really.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that
we put our attention more and more on the thing we're falling in love with, the nice feeling. Mm-hmm. Just put our attention on it.
Yeah.
And naturally, less and less put our attention on how we're so mad that this guy put his trash in our yard, or yeah, this guy do this or do that, or I can't get my cat to behave, or whatever is, yeah, making us upset for the day.
Absolutely. It's a kind of, it's a form of mind management, basically.
Oh.
You know, you start to realize, okay, you know, you come out and someone has put their trash in your bin. So, and it isn't fair. I grant you.
That seemed like such a silly thing to. I'm not upset about it. It was just a thing that,
yeah,
came to my mind.
No, but those are the kinds of things, really, that are part of living in, you know, in this world, that there are people who take advantage of other people and who are happy to take more than their share and all of those kinds of things. And it's annoying, you know. But then your question is, in Tibetan Buddhism, they speak about this as twice bitten. So first is the annoyance, the act that, you know,
that annoyed
that,
you.
That annoys you. But then your own mulling over it, over it and over it and over it. It's like being twice bitten by the snake, you know.
It is like that. And it's like the first bite is just a bite.
Yeah.
Little fang go,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
and it hurt, yeah, and it sting. The second bite is the poison.
Is the poison.
Exactly.
Coursing through your system.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. I have had this experience.
Yes, I have too.
You know, I get something upset me. I'm trying to think of examples, but none is coming to mind right now because I'm just so happy to be here,
no,
with you. So it's hard to access my anger when I'm here with you. But like something little annoying thing will happen. But yeah, it's the mulling it over and reliving it that is the real poison for me. And you is right.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is the part that you can actually mitigate. You can actually move your attention.
Move my attention.
Because the initial reaction is normal, honestly. You know, we're all somewhere on a spectrum as to how much we react to these kinds of things, you know. That is to be expected. But then it's a matter of, what do you do with that? How much do you want to keep suffering it, you know?
Mm. And instead, if it so happens that I decide I don't want to keep suffering,
yeah,
then I just return to putting my attention on what now? The vastness?
The ease of being. And you can always go to your direct experience of your physical, you know, moment. Like, you can put your attention on simply seeing, right?
Yeah.
Just seeing or hearing. Or smelling something.
Breathing.
Breathing,
I like,
absolutely.
To breathe.
You're always breathing. And if all of that is not cutting through the strong emotion or reaction, then another trick is to put your attention into gratitude.
Ah, oh, yes.
Not gratitude about the infraction against you, but rather gratitude about all that you love of your life. So you can even start with gratitude for being able to see gratitude for being able to hear. Isn't it amazing that we go along and we don't even think about those things, right? But if anything is challenged or anything is suddenly broken or not working properly, there's suddenly this keen awareness on that problem and a wish and a hope that it could get handled. But isn't it also interesting that, you know, you get the tooth fixed and you no longer have the toothache?
Yeah.
And then you go along and you forget about ever having had a toothache. You forget about how grateful you feel for the fact that it's gone.
Yes.
You know, so this is a counter to all of that, to actually bump up your sense of gratitude, especially when you're feeling low or feeling agitated or depressed.
Yeah, I see that when I'm then driving in my car, and if somebody cut me off, mm-hmm. it make me angry. Mm-hmm. It make me so angry. Then I'm in my anger and I can go, oh, okay, well, I'm thankful for my cats and for Helmut and I have my health and my tooth don't hurt.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I like to keep it very much, you know, contained in the direct experience one is having. And people do gratitude practices. I know someone who for many years now, she and her college roommate either call or email every day just some line of gratitude of their day, some simple little line. And it forces your attention into what are you going to pick for your little choice of the day?
Yes, and this is kind of like what you say last night about the two wolves that live inside. Mm-hmm. Will you tell that again?
Mm-hmm. A young Indian boy says to his grandfather, "Grandfather, there are two wolves who live inside of me. One is very docile and calm and generous and kind and loving. And the other is vicious and hateful and dangerous. And these are at war in me. These two wolves are fighting inside of me. Which do you think is going to win, Grandfather?" And the grandfather says, "The one that you feed."
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can feed the good, the docile, nice one by giving it our attention.
Yes, exactly. Right, right. And so, of course, I'm not speaking about letting people, you know, abuse you or having to constantly turn the other cheek if you're around dangerous people. It's fair enough to just get away from them as fast as you can. And I'm also not a big proponent of having to generate love for everyone.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, I'm certainly not saying be unkind. Definitely not. But I think sometimes it's just unrealistic to have to be generating love for people who are behaving really in reprehensible ways and are dangerous and are cruel and are doing terrible things. One can feel sorry for them to some degree. You know, you can feel compassion and know that, you know, they're broken inside. But to have to actually then generate love for them, it's like an extra step that I used to try to make myself do, and that is not realistic for me. If someone else can, well and good, you know.
That's really interesting that you letting yourself and consequently me off the hook.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about in recent time is just being really authentically true in your own case, like just to yourself, being authentically true. And it may not look spiritually correct, you know, but it's a form of freedom. And I think that if there is a combination of this love of quietness and of the quiet of the heart, let's call it, is another way to come at this, because sometimes passionate presence may seem a little bit energetic. But there's also a kind of quiet that is part of it as well. And if that is your experience in life, then you can pretty well trust that you're not going to go out trying to harm anyone or trying to seek revenge or trying to do anything.
Well, give it time. The day is young. I don't know. Who can we get revenge on?
So, you know, you can kind of trust your own good nature when you're in this quiet. There is a natural tenderness that comes with this seeing. It just comes automatically.
Yeah.
So that said, then you can be really authentic. And there are some things you want to move away from, some things you just don't approve of, some things you don't want to support in any way.
Yeah.
And some things you may work really hard to stop, you know. But it's possible to do that without intense hatred in one's heart.
Oh, you know? Yes. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you talk about putting awareness onto this quietness of the heart, onto this awakened awareness, this passionate presence, you were saying last night that it's not a matter of stopping your life and just sitting in lotus position while you explore your quiet heart. You still can be involved in your life and in your world and having goals, even activities, passions that you want to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a way to do it with this awareness of your quiet heart and yes. with this freedom yes. of being, yes. ease of being.
Yeah. And as I was saying last night, from that quietness of heart, sometimes one's motivation really changes. Right.
Oh, yes.
Remember, we were talking about that.
Say that again.
Yeah, well, you know, again. Sometimes, you know, one might have goals and feel very driven toward those goals for reasons that are, let's just for shorthand say, ego-based. You know?
Well, let us say for my case, when I wanted to be a world-famous button designer, I will admit that a big part of that... Yes, I love to design buttons, but a big part of it was, oh, everybody gonna love me because I'm so great and my buttons is the best in the whole world, you know.
Yeah.
So I do see now that there was some, what you say, ego?
Yeah, I was using that as a shorthand, but yes, that kind of wanting to be somebody, and sometimes that goes along with wanting to be above others.
Yeah, my buttons is better than everybody's, mm-hmm. and it's important for the world to know yeah. I'm the best.
Yeah, all that, you know.
Yeah.
So then it, from the quietness of the heart, the motivation shifts. It goes from getting something to giving things away. In other words, you're giving away, your creativity is motivated and rising from you're wanting to just, I like to say, you just want to be good compost for having been here, you know?
Yes. You know. Giving it away.
Yeah.
This is the Giselle Show podcast, meet friends. You're listening to? That was part one of my interview with Catherine Ingram. Oh, she has such wonderful, interesting things to say. It's really, boy, oh boy, I just like her so much. What do you think so far? Do you like her perspective? It's really nice, I think. Anyway, let us take a break. We're going to be right back.